This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. The Champions League. Liverpool make easy meat of the group of death, rotating their squad while breezing past a disappointing Atleti. It's easy too for City over Bruges, despite John Stones scoring a wonderful face-own goal. PSG slip up in Leipzig. How come Ajax are so good? 1,000 goals for Real Madrid in the European Cup. We'll rank all of them. There's a Manchester derby to preview. We'll ask, is Ronaldo good for United or not? No, I promise we won't ask that question. Conte's reign at Spurs begins, and there's the rest of the Premier League weekend to look forward to. Fulham hit 7. Philippe's angry about something or other. We have exciting news about the pod being a motivational tool, the casting for the Football Weekly movie, your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendinning, welcome.
Hi, Max. How are you?
I am very good. Thank you very much. Mark Langdon from The Racing Post. Hello.
Hello, Max.
And Philippe Auclair. Bonjour, ça va, mon petit lapin?
Ça va, mon petit lapin. Et toi, mon chou?
Yes. Dylan O'Rourke Glendinning, Barry's fictional son, and I forget the exact details, says, will there be any bleeps on this pod? Hashtag pods gone. Kaiser, will there be a full and frank apology for the censorship on Wednesday's pod? Hashtag games gone. Yes, Mark?
I was walking over London Bridge last night listening to the pod, and it actually made me jump when the bleep came in. I would have been much more offended to have actually heard the swear word. It really did scare me.
Anyway, yes, we haven't gone puritanical. Just producer Silas was feeling oversafe, and it slipped through, and we would like to apologise for the lack of industrial language you may have heard in the broadcast. Anyway, Philippe's here, so I'm sure by part three there'll be a Frenchman saying bollocks. Liverpool 2. Liverpool 2, Atletico 0. We do have kids listening as well. I'm always slightly unsure what we should do. We had a meeting about it once and then we forgot. But anyway, they're only words. Liverpool 2, Atleti 0. Liverpool win the group of death with two games to spare. I mean, this was very straightforward, Barry, wasn't it?
Yeah, Atletico Madrid didn't bring a great deal to the party except their usual petulance. They lost their heads during the game after going 2-0 down, and Liverpool won with a minimum of fuss, and the main sort of sidebar material out of the game seems to have been Trent Alexander-Arnold's excellent performance with two assists, two wonderful crosses, and then subsequent conversations about where or if he now fits into Gareth Southgate's England team. But for a group of death, it was pretty easy for Liverpool to negotiate, and now they have two games that they just don't have to worry about at all, and good for them. It's not great for the competition, but it's good for Liverpool.
Yeah. Etienne says, would England have won the Euros with Trent and the form he's in right now? I do feel we need an England right back argument. So it feels like just for a bit of summer nostalgia, don't we?
I love also in the form that he's right now. Well, that's not the form he was at the time of the Euro.
I quite like fullbacks. I just felt like I hit a quota of trying to compare Reece James and Kieran Trippier. I got full up and I can't do it anymore. I want them all. My Trippier wasn't good in this game, was he actually? But I just want them all to be set free and not to have to think about just one of them's there and it's all fine. With apologies to the one that I've forgotten. Who have I forgotten? Kyle Walker. That's it. Having said that, Mark, Trent Alexander-Arnold's delivery is beautiful. It's sort of Beckham-esque, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Harry Kane would have loved that, wouldn't he? In the Euros. No, it was. It was. But in that, he is one of the most creative players in Europe, playing in a position that as Gary Neville. Nobody wants to be Gary Neville, and nobody wants to play right back. It used to be a position where you would just get sort of shifted out there if he wasn't quite good enough at centre back or tall enough. But sort of the way that position has developed over in recent years, I think has been one of the real big changes of football, really, in the way that the fullback is now sort of like a winger, and Trent Alexander-Arnold is as good as anybody in the attacking third at delivering those balls. And you said sort of Beckham-esque. I felt it was almost Kevin De Bruyne-esque, the way that he was sort of really whipping them in, and you couldn't fail but score, really. And I don't quite know how you stop that sort of cross coming in and the way that he dictates games, because it's a really hard position to sort of man mark somebody. I'm sure somebody eventually will have to come up with a plan that stops those Liverpool fullbacks, but nobody seems to have been able to have done it yet successfully.
And also, it's the point on the pitch from which he delivers those crosses is quite unusual. It's like usually you have wingers going to the byline and almost crossing from the corner flag or close to. He doesn't do that. Very often these crosses come from the edge of the box, actually, the corner of the box, or a little bit further back. They're not traditional crossing points, basically, which makes them even more difficult to stop. And I have to say, when we talk about, well, Trent Alexander-Arnold, obviously we're also talking about Mohamed Salah, because it is the whole dynamic on that right flank which is working. And I would add to those two, I would add Jordan Henderson.
Sure.
I wanted to give some Jordan Henderson love today, Max, if
please
that's okay.
Do. I've just heard he's the face of the Sports Direct Christmas advert, so I think you probably want to take it away. But anyway, carry on.
Oh, man, I didn't know that. You know, you have to ruin everything. But anyway, one thing which I find remarkable, I mean, first of all, he's essential because he will provide the cover when Trent Alexander-Arnold will go forward. Henderson will always have an incredibly astute reading of the game to know where he should be himself positioned. But the thing is that despite the fact that this Liverpool midfield, I mean, Thiago has been unavailable for a long time. Fabinho has been unavailable. James Milner has been injured. You look around, the one thing which has been constant this season, apart from the first game and I think one other game, which is, I can't remember which one, but a not very important Premier League game, he's been then in the starting 11, Jordan Henderson, who was missing last season. And I think his presence makes a huge difference. And he's one of the enablers of this remarkable productivity of the Liverpool attack on the right-hand side.
Yeah, because also he runs beyond, doesn't he? Like you sort of think of him as more defensive, but he runs beyond, which creates the space, I get, for Trent Alexander-Arnold. On the development of the fullback.
Sorry Max, I just think, on the subject of Jordan Henderson, I think I could forgive him for being the face of the Sports Direct Christmas advertising campaign if he appears in it either wearing antlers or dressed as an elf.
I should check. Could producer George check that Jordan Henderson is actually involved? I just heard it on the radio just now. But I believe it's true before I have to announce an apology to him like I did to Sam Neill, which I quickly retracted yesterday. On the subject of the development of fullbacks and how they've changed in football, did anyone see, slightly off topic, but Match of the Day 2, and Chris Wilder, who I thought was really interesting on it, was, I think it was Aaron Cresswell he was pointing out, and just talking about just the amount of running you have to do, because you do this incredible recovery run to get all the way back to make a challenge, and then suddenly you're breaking down the right or the middle, and then you think, oh God, I've got to bomb up there again. The sort of level of fitness, or the different type of fitness you need to be a fullback, is compared to, say, a central midfielder or a centre forward even, I just found it really interesting. I don't know if anyone saw it.
I did see that, and it called to mind when Matt Doherty went to Spurs from Wolves. I had reservations about how he'd get on because of the sheer amount of running he'd have to do under Jose Mourinho, running he wasn't used to doing. And I think it's fair to say it hasn't really worked out for him at Tottenham. Maybe Antonio Conte will be able to get a tune out of him, and if he doesn't, presumably he'll move on. But it is a ferocious amount of work, and I would be interested in comparing the fitness of, say, an Aaron Cresswell to, say, Gary Neville in his pomp, who was probably, being so industrious and hardworking, as fit as players of that generation were. I'd imagine they don't even compare.
I suppose Ashley Cole was sort of one of those that really, I mean, not on his own, but he sort of helped to change that role. And even under kind of, I suppose, you know, more defensive-minded coaches, he still was able to do that sort of really, you know, just up and down and be both a great left-back but also a great left-winger as well. And he was somebody that had great, you know, tremendous fitness.
A word on Diogo Jota, Philippe, who is really good in the air for someone. He's not as short as you think.
Yes,
he
I know.
Is. I think he's around 5'10". I'm not sure. But he's not tiny. In my mind, he's a tiny man, but he isn't. He's been such a great addition. And to sort of break into that Firmino, Mane, Salah role, and the fact that he can kind of do more than one of those roles is perfect for Liverpool, isn't it?
Yeah, and when it comes to his heading prowess, I believe, is the way to qualify it. Mm-hmm. It's not really a question of, it's partly a question of physique, but it's more a question, especially as far as it's concerned, of knowing exactly where to position yourself to have a really incredible sense of where to be and the timing of his jumps as well. But most often, actually, you will see when he's... I mean, he scored one, yes, which was recently, which was he was fighting the ball with two bigger defenders than he is. But often he's in a situation where he's actually heading with quite a bit of space around him. He seems to have a knack to find those...
Yeah.
But you know the famous pockets of space, unit?
Yeah.
You know, you've got the acres of space, which is divided into pockets of space.
Yeah. But you don't want to be you don't want to be in someone's pocket, but you do want to be in a pocket, but the pocket
exactly.
of space.
Off space. Yeah, exactly.
Or a half space.
Absolutely, even better. Yeah.
As long as you're
a half space, yes.
Jordan Henderson was the 2020 face of Sports Direct. This year, Jack Grealish, Jordan Pickford, Mason Mount, Declan Rice, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Fran Kirby, Emma Raducanu as well. How can he be? Isn't Raducanu like Dior and Sports Direct? That's an ill-fitting two, isn't it? Who goes in and buys
Sports Direct?
What do? You buy a diamond encrusted handbag and then a pair of sports socks. Who's doing that? Anyway, Ross says, was the Felipe sending off in the Liverpool game the closest a referee has ever been to being sexy? Clyde, is Felipe's red card for Atleti the only red card ever awarded for just general shithousery that the panel can think of? Daniel says, does the panel feel that giving Felipe a red card because he got pied was small man behaviour from the referee? What did you think? Did you think it was... I'll go to Barry. Did you think that was a red card?
No, but I can understand why it was given. Now, I'm not sure. Was it a straight red in the end? Or
Yeah.
No, it wasn't a straight red. You could certainly make a case for two yellows in quick succession. One for the foul, one for the dissent in refusing to come and have his name taken. I was listening to the radio earlier, Ali McCoist thought it was outrageous behaviour from the referee. I don't agree. I thought it was hilarious, and but probably not the right thing for the ref to do, but massively entertaining.
Yeah, I guess in the laws, hilarious behaviour is not necessarily there for the referee. I actually thought fair play because of the way he sort of jumped into his calf, and if Mane's foot's on the ground, that could be quite serious. I mean, I think there should be sin bins if you don't try and get the ball and try and foul someone, but I'm on a quest here, a lonely quest, of which I will carry on. Going. Yes, Philippe.
After the game, UEFA specified that the red card was for violent conduct, that is for the tackle and the cleats raking the back of Mane's foot, and had nothing to do with the actual general ignorance of where the whereabouts of the referee, which I think is a little bit disappointing, because I really hoped it was for dissent. But no.
I apologise then. I was working on the assumption that he was originally going to book him. And I'm still not convinced that, though UEFA said that, that's actually what happened.
Exactly, because it felt like when you see the expression in Mr. McAlee's eyes, you think, you're really trying me, guy. You're really trying. Oh, you're really trying me. Well, here's a red card. Three times he puts the whistle to his lips. Three times he's ignored. And I love that. To be honest, I'm all in favour of it. And I think for many people, there was a little frisson of delight of some karmic punishment for the general shithousery that's been accompanying Atletico and its manager for so many years.
Liverpool now unbeaten in 25 matches in all competitions. Their joint longest such run since they joined the Football League in 1893. I mean, they are good, Mark, aren't they? What's the sky's the limit? Is that right, Mark?
Yeah, they are. They are quite good. I mean, they are. I think, you know, sort of back more like the level that we come to expect of them under Jurgen Klopp, where they nearly reached 100 points twice. They won a Champions League. They were also Champions League finalists last season. It was a chaotic season for many reasons, not least the injuries that I think we've discussed, many times. I do feel like the front three and Jota now making it the front four have livened up, and not so much Salah, who was, you know, always and has always been outstanding, but Firmino picked up that unfortunate injury. I think sort of he has played much better this season when he's been available. We've already spoken about Jota. Even Mane went through sort of a dry spell last season as well, but they are absolutely back to their best, and they now have that opportunity to rest players for those final two matches. And I think that that probably is more important to Liverpool than maybe some of the other teams like Chelsea and Manchester City, because they haven't got that depth of squad. Jurgen Klopp's been able to rotate to a certain extent, but he hasn't got like 11 players, I don't think, that he can call upon if needed. So sort of in backup. So to be able to rest them ahead of, you know, what we traditionally is known as a very busy period, I could be really important for Liverpool.
I thought, you know, Oxlade-Chamberlain played well. It was nice to see him out there. I hope that injury isn't too serious. And Tsimikas as well looks like a good cover for Robertson. Not quite the same dynamism, but still, you know, still good. So, yeah, Liverpool are good. They've won the group. Porto are second on 5 points. Atleti have 4. AC Milan 1 point. Interesting, I guess, Milan doing so well in Serie A and only getting their first point last night in Group B against Porto. Interesting that, you know, this is their only, their first point, AC Milan's, against Porto last night, considering how well they're going in Serie A. Mark, a brief thought on this football match?
Yeah, I think from sort of Milan's point of view, they've had a lot of injuries this season. And while they've got some very sort of experienced slash old players in sort of Ibrahimovic and Giroud in the squad, I think it is still a really young team. If you look at some of those players that just haven't got the experience in Champions League football, they've been a little bit unlucky at times, but also against Porto, you know, they've been, I think, the sort of weaker of the two in both matches against them. So it may be just a step too far for them in this sort of redevelopment of Milan, who are a very famous club, but are not at the sort of level they once were, and that's where they're trying to get back to, but it will take time.
All right, that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll go through the rest of the Champions League games last night. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly, the Football Supporters Association Awards 2021. Voting is still open. Go to at @WeAreTheFSA on Twitter, or go to the website thefsa.org.uk. You can vote for Podcast of the Year, Guardian Football Weekly. That's us. You can vote for Newspaper of the Year, The Guardian. Some of us write for them. You know, Barney, Johnny, Susie, Jonathan, but they write the good stuff. I write what I did on my summer holidays. You, Barry, you do some. You're quite good at it writing, aren't you, Barry?
Well, it's nice of you to give me a mention in the "and finally" section.
Anyway, Susie Wilson, Johnny Lou are all up for Writer of the Year. Barry, cruelly overlooked. David Squires is up for, I presume, Drawer of the Year, which presumably is an absolute shoo-in to win. So vote for Squires.
And Drawer. Drawer. Yeah, cartoonist,
artist,
surely.
Artist of the year. Oh, what is he?
Graphic artist of the year.
Is he a graphic artist? That sounds graphic. That sounds.
He's
a
cartoonist.
Dirty, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a cartoonist.
It's not, no? Isn't graphic like rude stuff? Maybe Squires has a blue routine if you need it. Who knows? Radio show of the year. You can vote for me and Barry as well. That's not connected to the Guardian, but you know it's only one question down. What are you going to do? Right. If you don't vote for us, the podcast stops. It's very simple. Manchester City 4, Club Brugge 1. I mean, the best moment of this game, Barry, was John Stones' own goal, wasn't it?
It was. Full disclosure, I was out gallivanting last night, so I've only seen the BT Sport extended highlights this game. That was certainly the highlight. And then, oddly, afterwards, they had a discussion about where is it all going wrong for Jack Grealish at City? And I am exaggerating there, but I was slightly mystified because I thought he'd slotted into the Manchester City team quite well. So just shows what I know. So I think it was so routine a win and they couldn't really find much to talk about that is Jack doing as well as he should be at City, which if that's the worst problem City have at the moment, they're probably going to be okay.
Does that mean we have to think of like a new thing to ask about Manchester City? You know, is the relationship between Raheem Sterling and João Cancelo at boiling point? Do we just invent one? What is it? I mean, Mark, this was just, it was a routine win against a side that they're better than. When they play lovely football, it it's really nice to watch.
I was cheering. I mean, I don't often cheer Man City on, but I was cheering them on because I thought if it finishes 1-1, I know what discussion we're going to have on today's pod on whether Man City could do with a new striker to finish off all of these chances. But you know, they eventually wore Club Brugge down. I mean, just on Jack Grealish, I totally agree with Barry because I mean he's number one in the Premier League for progressive carries. And carries into the penalty area this season, which is you know, exactly
like a crisis to me.
Yeah, I mean, those are exactly the type of that's the qualities that he was brought to the club to do, and he's currently the best in the Premier League at doing those. So I don't think that Jack Grealish is in any way the issue at Manchester City. This was a comfortable enough win against, I think, quite spirited opponents. And you know, Club Brugge have been given a real difficult draw against Leipzig, Paris and also Manchester City. I'd like to see them up against a team sort of more at their level because I think that they've got a bit more to give and that they've competed well enough, I think, given their resources. But you know, Manchester City were just too good for them eventually, and it's what they often do, just wear teams down, and you know eventually the spaces will come.
Bruce, do have that centre forward whose name is difficult to pronounce, so I'll leave it to you, Philippe.
De Ketelaere.
De Ketelaere.
De Ketelaere.
De Ketelaere.
Yes.
It actually is really flowing. De Ketelaere. You think he is, he's one to watch?
I think he's a gem. He's not, to be honest, you can play him as a striker, but you can also play him as a winger or a second striker. Is one of the most elegant players, I think, that you will see, young players you will see in Europe at the moment, who famously could have made it as a tennis player and then became decided to go for football instead. I've talked to a few because I've already eulogized and rhapsodized about him on the pod. And I actually got some messages from Brugge, Club Brugge fans. They were not saying, please don't talk about him because we want to keep him. They were telling me he might well become the greatest player we ever had in our history. That's telling you what the fans, the stadium goers, you know, the season ticket holders think of him then. He's very, very special. And perhaps Manchester City could do with somebody like him at centre-forward.
Well,
no, sorry,
because,
sorry. This was, yeah. No.
Well,
sorry.
Especially because Jack Grealish is so woefully out of form.
So absolutely out of form, absolutely.
Maybe a swap deal for Grealish. Also in this group, and it didn't matter a whole lot because, you know, PSG, looks like they'll go through with Man City, but they drew with Leipzig. It was an interesting game. I mean, I don't know what Kimpembe is doing in injury time. PSG are 2-1 up. It's just like a piggyback, you know, he just like jumps on another man and just hopes that he'll just ride into the sunset.
Something like that, yes. But he's no other PSG players has given as many penalties in the history of the Champions League as Presnel Kimpembe. So obviously there is a wild streak in him, but to be honest, Max, it was very much in the logic of a game that PSG should have lost twice, three times over. They were awful. They were genuinely absolutely awful from the first minute to the last. With in between, as per usual, they're a kind of a Manchester United that really that wins all the time. If you see what I mean, is that the performances are actually not good. They're disjointed. They lack balance, but they have moments of brilliance from a number of brilliant players. And so you have Cristiano Ronaldo for Manchester United, but Paris Saint-Germain, you will have Neymar, you will have Kylian Mbappe. Amazingly enough, yesterday you had Wijnaldum, which has come as a surprise to everybody, I think. But apart from that, they were woeful. They should have been 4 down by the 20th minute.
Didn't they? 1-0, Leipzig had a penalty. Which is
yeah, André Silva misses a penalty, I mean, and really misses it. Or Donnarumma stops it, whatever, you know, whichever we know is impressive. We have to talk about Nkunku, by the way, who scored his fifth goal in 4 Champions League games this season for RB Leipzig. But RB Leipzig confirmed, you know, what we've seen before is that they're defensively, they're very weak. And they paid for it. But honestly, that PSG, there's absolutely no way they can go deep in this competition with this kind of performance. Truly impossible.
To the PSG Manchester United final.
Yes, of course.
Yes, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, I like a lot of people that have been on the pod to really admire Pochettino. And so I think we've given him a pretty easy ride in Paris. And yes, it's not the team that I think ideally would like. I still think he should be doing better with this group of players. You know, if we're saying that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is sort of, you know, completely out of his depth and has to find a way to get all of these attackers working properly together, then, you know, we just say, oh, well, yeah, but this is not the team that Poch wants. And, you know, I've said it myself, but the more you watch Paris, the more you just think that they're nowhere near sort of a team at all. And, you know, the midfield is a bit of a mess, really. I mean, not much sort of passing comes out of there. There was a really funny moment during the game where Leipzig were building up from the back, and Neymar just bent down and started doing his laces while the game was going on, which was a remarkable sort of moment, and probably is one of the reasons why Poch is not getting a tune out of PSG. But at some stage, I think if he's not already under big pressure, you know, there are questions being asked of, you know, like he needs to get this team functioning better, even if it's not sort of in his mould. He still, as the manager, he has to do something.
You have to say, Mark, that at the same time, like any PSG manager I can think of, he's only partly responsible for what's going wrong with his team. The club's in a real state at the moment. There are all these stories. I mean, the Sergio Ramos story is just extraordinary.
You know, don't tell Barry.
it's unbelievable. They got rid of Thiago Silva and to get Sergio Ramos, who hasn't played and might never play. And there are some very wild rumours going on about PSG at the moment. I can't go too much into details, Max, because I know I want to spare George, our producer, having to go to the lawyer.
It's not George now. It's my phone ringing at 2 a.m. That's what it is.
So, okay. there is so much that is wrong within the club at the moment that the atmosphere and the team itself cannot be but affected negatively by it. And I think what you see on the pitch is a reflection of what is going in the club as a whole, which is why it's disjointed, which is why it's unbalanced, which is why it's honestly at times completely pathetic. I mean, I don't know, Mike, if you watched the first 20 minutes of that game, but it was appalling, absolutely appalling.
I mean, it was as if Paris sort of didn't realise there was a game going on, really, and that they'd just been parachuted in. At the moment, they don't look like a team that can win the Champions League, but the Champions League is sort of decided from February onwards, and you know, we've seen a lot change in previous competitions.
Into Group C, Ajax have got 12 points from four games. Dortmund second, Sporting third. They both got six, Beşiktaş on four. Ajax winning 3-1 in Dortmund. It was an interesting game, Mark, wasn't it, given that Dortmund went down to 10 men with a sending off, which I can't work out if I thought it was a red card or not, because obviously you can fly into a challenge and not touch someone. But Hummels went in, and then the Ajax guy was trying a sort of step over type thing and trod on him instead. But still, it was a red for Hummels. Have I explained that at all well?
Yeah, you have. Yeah, I mean, just a bit that, I mean, it was a ridiculous red card. You didn't get to that bit, Max, right at the end. I mean, I don't think Hummels did sort of lunge in. It was a slide tackle that maybe was a yellow card. Maybe. I certainly don't think it was a red.
Do you think the Ajax player should be booked? Because he doesn't get hurt.
No, because Anthony sort of, he's trying to jump out of the way, and then I think he accidentally lands on
Hummels. No, but I mean, for the dive, like, he shouldn't. He's not in pain, and yet he rolls around. I mean, it's not the first time a player's done it.
Hummels didn't seem to have any blame for Anthony after the game, and actually sort of shook his hand quite nicely and warmly as he was walking off the pitch. I just think that this is a situation where Michael Oliver should have been asked to go to the screen and at least just make sure that what he thought he'd seen, he had seen, because I don't think that it did play out like that. There was also the way that Ajax came back in the last 20 minutes and won the game. Just, they're such an exciting team. But Dusan Tadic's goal came at a cost, Babs, I think it's fair to say. Yeah, there really was the Phil Babs about it. But just a really fun team to watch, Ajax, at the moment. And they are a side that are looking, outside of the obvious contenders, and looking like sort of one of the best teams in Europe at the moment. I'm sure some of those that we've spoken about will get their act together come the sort of new year and it'll become more difficult for them. But at the moment, they're looking really good.
A thought for Lars Sivertsen after that game, because as the president of the Sebastian Haller is terrific society, he scored again.
He did.
He scored again.
Yeah, he's got an incredible record in this Champions League. Well done, Lars. You're right about everything. Group D, Real Madrid at top, Inter second, Sheriff still in it, third, Shakhtar nowhere to be seen. Real Madrid beating Shakhtar 2-1, didn't have it all their own way. Two goals for Karim Benzema. His first goal was Real Madrid's 1,000th goal in the Champions League. His second, the 1,000th and first, was lovely. Lovely run from Vinicius and a lovely back heel from Casemiro. So Inter won 3-1 at Sheriff to leapfrog them into second place then. Mark says, I'm a surgical oncologist with a master's degree in cancer biology. I spent my entire adult life trying to understand the rules of cancer in order to fight it. After watching all these Champions League games, why is it harder to understand the rules of football than cancer? I mean, my first thought is, Mark, you should be doing something useful with your life, shouldn't you? Rather than trying to save the world. But I don't know, really. We try and work it out. A lot of the games now, when I'm watching them, I am... Well, actually, Mark Bosnich is sitting next to me with the laws of football. He's become my Australian Lars Sivertsen. But thank you, Mark, and I would suggest you carry on with your chosen profession, because it's probably more useful than any of this stuff. Barry, are you all right?
Yes.
Yes, I just wondered. You haven't done a whole lot in part two, but that's fine. Part three is where you'll come to the surface and shine.
Well, I think Philippe and Mark have it all covered more than adequately.
You're absolutely right. That'll do for part two. Part three, we'll look ahead to the Premier League games this weekend. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Sammy James, who we will know as producer Sammy, who also hosts the Fulhamish pod, says, can we put Fulham's 7-0 win at the top of the show? Yeah, they beat Blackburn 7-0. Harry Wilson was running amok. And Matt says, could you just pass my thanks on to Johnny Lewes, a Blackburn fan, after yesterday's pod? I thought watching my team get smashed 7-0 at home on the telly last night was pretty humiliating, until I heard the silence following his vultures story, the joke that he tells at the zoo. Oh, the silence. It cheered me right up. So that's what we're here for. So well done to Fulham. Yes, Barry?
Well, that joke was clearly a reference to something I'm unaware of. I thought it...
Was it a literary reference or was it a movie reference that somebody...
I think it might be... Is it a reference to that drunk Man City fan who was so happy to see his team win the FA Cup that he invaded the Wembley press box to shout abuse at all the journalists?
And he called them all vultures, did he?
I might be completely wrong, but I suspect it was a reference that none of us got.
So
we should have.
It was our fault, not Johnny's fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not against going into animal enclosures and just yelling, you're all bears, to some bears. Like, I quite like how literal it is. But yeah, I didn't understand the reference. But look, we teared up Matt, so that's great. Let's talk about the Manchester derby. We talked a lot about Manchester United yesterday, Barry, but you're sort of compelled to watch this football match. Just, I don't know what you want to happen. Part of me wants Manchester City to annihilate Manchester United. Part of me wants Ronaldo to score in the last minute, inexplicably giving the Manchester United the points. I'm going to ask you what's going to happen, but of course, you have no idea.
No, I don't have any idea, but I'm looking forward to it with interest. All available evidence suggests that, and recent historical evidence, you know, the Champions League game before the Liverpool game, suggests that Manchester City could absolutely obliterate Manchester United. And yet, I would not be hugely shocked if United somehow won this game. So I'm just looking forward to the game, and we can talk about what happened when it happens.
Yeah. Mark, any further thoughts? Or do you want to wait until Monday to reflect? Not that you're on Monday, Mark, but you know.
No, I'll get my review in now that you know, Manchester City have played United off the pitch and the missed chances they could do with a Harry Kane type centre forward, and Ronaldo, what a player, he's won it in the last minute. Now, I think that there'll be a lot of sort of managers, you know, those that really focus on the process will be hoping that City do annihilate Manchester United, because it will kind of validate all the work that they do on a daily basis, rather than, you know, the fact is you can just get the best player and just hope that he does something spectacular. I do think the loss of Varane is a big one for you know, fit for United in a game like this, because Maguire, as you spoke about yesterday, is not fully fit. And then you are, you know, Lindelof didn't play the other night. So you are wondering on sort of the fitness of that defence. And I think Varane just helps to hold things together sort of better than the others.
One thing I would add is that the recent record of Manchester City against Manchester United in the league is appalling. It is.
Yeah, United have done well against them, haven't they? They've sat back and counter-attacked, you know, into relative terms. They've got a good record.
So, yeah, I mean, the last game was a 2-0 victory for Manchester United. If you go before that, it was a draw, 0-0 draw. If you go before that, it was another loss for Manchester City. Actually, two other losses, if you take as well the League Cup game they played just before that. So it's an odd one. And like Barry, I think it could genuinely go either way, which is really the most banal thing to say.
That's what we get you on for.
Yes, absolutely. But I mean it. Sometimes banality is what is required.
Vadim says, what will come first? Donny van der Beek getting a full 90 minutes under Ole, or the end of the world? And obviously, your first question is, that's a silly question, but actually, it may be the end of the world. But that is possible, isn't it?
Well, given the state the world is in and all the climate change stuff and how little anyone seems to care about it, despite the lip service paid to it in recent days, I would say the end of the world, almost certainly.
Okay. Does that mean that if Donny van der Beek does play 90 minutes, that the world will never end, or the world will end immediately?
No, it just means that Donny van der Beek played 90 minutes under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer before the end of the world. That happened first.
They're unconnected. Everton Spurs is on Sunday. Obviously, Antonio Conte's first game will be against Vitesse this evening, Thursday evening, in the Europa Conference. Mark, with your Spurs hat on, how are you feeling about Conte?
Oh, I'm so excited. As a supporter, I think all you can really hope for sort of that level is just belief and, you know, hope that things are going to get better. And I feel like they will. I don't know for how long, but to get one of what I would consider to be sort of top five, top six managers in the world to come and to give the club, the whole club, sort of hope that, you know, they and belief, and also this kind of, I suppose, desire to be better. Because when Nuno was appointed, it felt like there was an acceptance that maybe sort of those top four positions were out of reach and they would save their money and just look to, you know, another time when that they could get a better manager. And they haven't got that. I don't think they've got long left of Son and Kane sort of at their peak level. And you may even say that Kane's past that now, but I don't believe that. I think he's just been dispirited by what happened in the summer. And if you've only got sort of maybe 2 years left of those at that level, getting a manager that maybe can really do something in that time. And yeah, I'm really excited by Conte. I was at the stadium on Saturday, and even before the game, people were just so miserable. They kind of knew what was coming. And just start believing again that things will get better. And I just can't have anybody comparing him to Jose Mourinho. I think he's just completely different to Jose Mourinho, and at a different level of his career as well. He's come from being a title winner. When Mourinho came to Spurs, he was on the way down. I just don't see that with Conte.
But as a Spurs fan, there must be part of you thinking, how that this can't work. Like Daniel Levy can't have had like a Damascene moment where he suddenly goes, you know, checkbook and pen, you know, blankety blank, etc.
Well, no, in January there will be a bust up because Conte will say, how do you expect me to win with all I've got? Because that's exactly what he did. Even when Inter spent an absolute fortune, it still wasn't enough for him. But I would much rather a coach be in there and be demanding of Daniel Levy, because I'm not sure that enough have been previously. And the pressure is really on Levy now to spend the money that they are going to get in from the NFL and from concerts and various other sort of gigs outside of football, to spend it on the team. And so when he's under pressure, it feels like he's finally, I think, done the right thing. And it should have happened in the summer, but it didn't. But, you know, it's the best 3-0 defeat Tottenham have had for a long time, that one against Manchester United.
John says, if Eddie Howe's missing the existential despair of club management, would he be better off taking the Newcastle job, or waiting to see if Norwich becomes available next week? Newcastle considering making Eddie Howe the next manager after Unai Emery rejected the club's advances. We touched on it yesterday. I'm interested to hear Philippe's thoughts on what's happening up there.
Are you really? Shall we keep to the football? Because the rest hasn't changed. And I think we've got to remind everybody that the rest is not going to change and that the narrative is going to shift, you know, from day to day, from week to week, to kind of normality, as has been the case with other clubs which are involved with this kind of owners. So we've got to remind ourselves that this is not going to go away. When it comes to their problems finding a manager, because they obviously have a problem finding a manager, it shows you perhaps that the hierarchy at the top of Newcastle are perhaps are not as well organized as they would like us to believe. The fact that they haven't yet identified a proper a manager yet shows that. And the fact is that if Eddie Howe decided to say yes, it would not have been their first choice, which is not ideal to start with a team which is in the state that Newcastle is actually in. Whether it would be a good choice or not, I'm tempted to tell you, what did we say about the Manchester derby? We'll see what happens. To be honest, I am not entirely convinced that he would be the right fit myself.
Actually, Charlie Baker, who I do a radio show with on Saturday, he says you can end any football conversation by saying, we'll see. And actually, he's absolutely right.
Yes.
Isn't he? That's a bit
of the thing about Eddie Howe is his philosophy, which is, you know, totally different to Unai Emery's, is to play possession-based, attractive football, which are two things the players of Newcastle have shown they are incapable of doing. You know, as a matter, they just can't do it. They can't keep possession, they can't play attractive football. So that's not great for a start. I would imagine, I'd be interested to hear Ryan Fraser's thoughts on the potential arrival of Eddie Howe, seeing as their relationship at Bournemouth ended very acrimoniously when Fraser wanted to go to Newcastle. So I'm just highly amused by the fact that apparently a lot of Newcastle fans are already angry at the new owners for making a mess of the Unai Emery appointment as a result of leaks to the press, which Emery clearly wasn't impressed by. And other Newcastle fans are going, well, we didn't want Unai Emery anyway. He's bottled it. So it's all highly entertaining and long may it continue. I always assume that people who have as much wealth as these people, you know, know what they're doing and must be intelligent, but it clearly isn't the case.
A bit of admin, a man who live-streamed himself on Facebook racially abusing three England football players after the Euro 2020 final has been jailed for 10 weeks. Jonathan Best, who's 52, posted a rant about Marcus Rashford, Jadon Sancho and Bukayo Saka. He was caught out after a colleague and Facebook friend reported the 18-second clip to Facebook and the police after he refused to take it down. Facebook took the clip down 3 days later. So at least he's been punished. FIFA's committed to net zero emissions by 2040. I'm just waiting for Philippe to make a noise.
I had temporarily muted my microphone, but it's that's it. You're not safe any longer, Max.
Okay, let me just read this out. Launches the FIFA climate strategy, Infantino committing to the pledge, and FIFA council member Isha Johansson making a speech at COP26 in Scotland. Your thoughts, Philippe?
I mean, to hear Isha Johansson make any statement on behalf of world football is extremely funny and entertaining for anybody who knows how Isha Johansson got to the top of football. Just Google her name and check out and you will see what I'm talking about. And there's nothing libelous in what I've said, Max. She's nothing libelous about that. As for Gianni Infantino, I mean, it's extraordinary to hear this man making those green pledges when he loves a private jet, Gianni. So, yeah, as usual, it's the usual FIFA. I'm saying one thing, I'm doing the other. Nothing's changed.
Ross says, can Philippe Auclair tell us a bit about the character Sam Neill plays in United Passions, the FIFA movie? João Havelange, the OG godfather at FIFA. Is that right?
I think that he was not, João Havelange was not really the godfather. Or if he was the godfather, he had somebody behind the throne who was far more important, which was his secretary general. And you know who his secretary general was. of course. It's our friend Josef Blatter. And what a magnificent transition to this other piece of news that we have for you, which is the fact they have finally been charged. Hooray!
They have.
Sepp Blatter and Michel Platini have finally been charged for fraud and other misdemeanors. And that's not libelous, because that's the Swiss Attorney General who says so. And so it's all about the famous 2 million Swiss francs payment that was related to a verbal agreement they had taken something like 20 years previously and was paid by to Michel Platini on Sepp Blatter's instructions. So it is going to go to trial now. And it says within several months. So, which, given the Swiss justice system glacial rhythm, is actually really quick, by the way. So we might see an end to this story, which actually cost Sepp Blatter and Michel Platini their roles at FIFA and UEFA, as well in the case of Platini, and caused them to be suspended by FIFA. And the little postscriptum, which is quite funny and ironical, is that FIFA today, that is Infantino, is very much on this occasion, not on others, is very much on the side of the Swiss justice system. It is actually for Blatter and Platini to pay back those 2 million Swiss francs. So this trial is going to be really, really good fun. It should be in about 6 months, which means that, so we'll have it perhaps at the time of the Champions League final, something like that. That would be great.
Do you think when we do pod merch, Barry, a T-shirt with Philippe's face, like artistic one that says, "That's not libelous, by the way," would I think that would do really well. Sean says, who would play the panel in the Football Weekly film? Speaking of films, Vincent Cassell for Philippe, Brendan Gleeson for Barry, Paul Hogan as Max. Anyway, you can send in your ideas if you like. John says, in an Alive film-type plane crash, who would Mark leave until last to eat if he was the only surviving pod member? The rules are he would have to consume a pod member completely before starting on the next one. Rescue would come on completion of the last member being finished.
Okay. Right.
Okay. I mean, you like them all because they're all meat.
Yeah. I mean, Archie loves his kebabs, so I'd probably go for him first, in the hope that maybe he'd had a kebab before the flight.
Some latent kebab inside Rinta.
In terms of last, I think I'd probably, if got to eat all of them, you'd have to go for the hairiest member, wouldn't you? Because I wouldn't fancy picking the way through all of the hairs. So that's got to be Lars, isn't it? Lars has got to be the hair. I've got a feeling it's probably Lars or John Bruin, probably the hairiest of the two. I think it's probably Lars.
I've never seen them naked, but you know, who's got the most body hair out of Bruin and Lars? It's a, you know, it's a Channel 4 show, isn't it, that we'll try and commission.
Do you think Danny van der Beek would have played 90 minutes by the time you finished?
Now, we had a lovely tweet from Ryan Owens, who is a track sprinter for Great Britain cycling team, Olympic, World and Commonwealth silver medalist. After our discussion yesterday on whether a volley's a volley, it all got quite existential. And, you know, at the end of it, Barry went, well, you know, it's no real point in anything. He said, just a quick one to say, while most athletes would listen to some kind of motivational music in the build-up to their competition at the Olympics, my ears were filled with the tune of a Barry monologue followed with, but I suppose nobody cares. It brought everything back into perspective. So Barry, you and we are now a hype machine for Olympians.
Well, the thing is, Ryan only took home silver. So I consider myself to have failed there. I think Chris Hoy, you know, what he's alluding to is when track cyclists are in that sort of pit in the middle of the track, warming up in their own, they all have their own little sections, and you see them warming up with their headphones in. And Chris Hoy, I think Prodigy is his hype music of choice. So if I'm comparing Firestarter to me blathering on about Newcastle's static midfield.
Are you saying
Ryan needs to change quite literally change his tune?
Are you saying
because I was looking at his Palmeiras, and is that the word, Philippe?
Yes, Palmeiras, absolutely.
Palmeiras. He's never won a gold medal, and I think I might be holding him back.
Do you think when the on the B of the burn, when the lactic acid is kicking in, when you're at the bottom of that mountain, when the yellow jersey is just a millisecond away and you just hear, I don't care. It doesn't matter. I haven't seen it. Go to somebody else on that. Is that a question? That's just a statement, etc. You think that's the one where he goes, do you know what? I don't really care about it. I never really like cycling anyway. Sod it. I'll just get up and we'll just get the bus. Anyway, thank you, Ryan. Thank you so much. I mean, look, if any, I think what's fascinating is, you know, people listen to podcasts and lots of, you know, it's a routine for people. And I just love the idea that, you know, most people are just walking their dog. And there's Ryan. It's at the fucking Olympics. What's he doing? How's that? But if anyone can better that.
Sorry, the other thing, Max, is Ryan won silver as part of the team sprint, I think it was, a pursuit. I can't remember. Sorry, Ryan. But maybe it was the other guys on the team who let him out. Maybe they were listening to Totally Football Show or the Football Ramble.
You're absolutely right. And could Ryan also confirm or not? I remember being roundly mocked on TalkSport for asking a guy trying to get the world record for the number of laps of a velodrome in an hour if he got dizzy. It seems like quite a sensible question to me. Ryan, could you confirm if dizziness ever comes in, if you're just going round and round and round and round and round the track?
Basically, well, Alex Dowsett failed to break the track world record for an hour yesterday, funnily enough. So perhaps he would have done better if he'd been listening to us. But I don't know if he got dizzy or not.
Right, that's enough. It certainly is enough for today, isn't it? Thanks, Barry.
You're welcome.
Cheers, Mark.
Thank you, Max.
Cheers, Billy.
De rien, Max.
De rien. We'll be back on Monday.
This is The Guardian.